Good morning, Santa Barbara. You're tuned into KCSB 91.9 FM, and this is the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. Surely you know that paper. Poodle Radio. KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. The show is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. My name's Colin Marshall, your host here every Tuesday, 8 a.m. until 9 a.m., bringing you stuff from the Independent, stories from the Independent, contributors, subjects, all kinds of news about Santa Barbara and interesting to Santa Barbarans. The music, of course, is organized by pop culture editor Ali Cummingore. Right now, it's a cut from Lee Koch with Free From Misery. He's playing Soho today. Tonight, rather, Tuesday, January 4th. Today on the show, we have a couple people who are making, who are making Santa Barbara a more intellectually and artistically interesting place to be. Later on in the program, we're going to be talking to Kathy Murillo, the news director from KCSB. You'll know her if you listen to the station. And Kathy Oliverson, who is working with, Kathy wrote about and well, they're both named Kathy. Kathy Murillo wrote about Kathy Oliverson works with Viva El Arte. They are bringing, well, I'll let them describe it, but they're bringing a new kind of cultural program to Santa Barbara. And before that, we're going to be talking to Ted Tedesco, the founder of the Santa Barbara Institute on World Affairs. And without delay, we're going to get into that because Ted is right here in the studio. Ted, welcome to the program.
Good morning.
And before I get this mic turned around, I'll ask you the first question here, which is that, well, let's start out simple. What is the Santa Barbara Institute on World Affairs?
Well, let me tell you a little bit about why I thought this might be a mechanism for helping us talk about some of the issues that are going on. If you had held a meeting maybe 10 years ago to say, let's talk about the next 10 years. So here we are in year 2000, and all of a sudden in the middle of that time, lots of crazy and disastrous things have happened to us. And
yes,
the question is, how well prepared was anybody to deal with them? 9/11, oil spills, Iraq invasions, all of these kinds of things all have come about in a very short period of time. So the thought that I had was, what's going to happen in the next 10 years and how well prepared are we to deal with these things? Because I think there is an ancillary problem that's going on, and that is, over the last few years, people like myself, who consider themselves maybe news junkies, if you will, have seen this terrible polarization about issues. You can't talk about almost anything except you get so quickly labeled that all the listening and the ability to articulate and debate is all gone. And so the question is, everybody seems to hold these views and doesn't want to change. And I thought the combination of what's going to happen in the next 10 years and how well prepared are we to deal with it as a nation, as individuals, maybe we can structure something that will help that start. And so along came the idea of, let's bring in people, but let's be able to talk with them.
Right.
Let's interact with them. Let's educate ourselves about them. Let's distribute the information using the latest kind of internet technology and podcasts. And so the whole thing began to form in my mind as to something Santa Barbara might be interested in doing and something that I was willing to dedicate my time to.
And Matt Kittman's article for The Independent on the project, he stresses the phrase civil discourse. And tell me if I'm right about this. The decade of the 2000s would have gone a little bit smoother, maybe a lot smoother, if we had some more of that.
Exactly.
And how do you know how to get civil discourse back. I guess what were some of your first ideas, your first notions about how the sub question, is civil discourse something to be restored, or is it something we've never quite properly had? And how do you go about that? What were your first impulses about how to cultivate a discourse that isn't what you'd gotten used to in the news?
Well, the idea of civil discourse, I guess that's a kind of a word or a phrase that wraps up the ability to sit and discuss issues that are defining as to our life, our character as a nation, as individuals, and how we deal with each other. And nobody seemed to have, there seemed to be over the last 10, 20 years, at least an ability for, let's pick on the Congress, because they're easy to pick on, unfortunately.
Yes.
But there was a time where, after a suitable amount of debate, actual decisions used to be made. And people would abide by those decisions and move on to other issues for the benefit of citizens. Well, anybody can tell you, if you follow anything that happens, is that that's gone out the window. And now it's a question of, we win, we're going to win, we don't like what you're doing, and we're going to do everything impossible to destroy what you have done and what the democratic process has brought about.
Right.
So I see democracy and the participatory representative democracy kind of going by the wayside, all in the name of, I'm right, you're wrong, I don't want to talk about it anymore, and if I ever get control, this is what I'm going to do. We've lost all of that, and I want to restore that in small bits and pieces, but to show and demonstrate that, in fact, you can have strong views about things, but that others have views that are equally impressive or worthy of being talked about or listened to. And through that process, maybe we come about with a better feeling about things, more knowledge, and even maybe some solutions.
Now, I want to get out to the listeners, because there's a lot of people who enjoy civil discourse, who listen to the station and who want more of it. I want to get out to them. The first concrete ways that the Santa Barbara Institute on World Affairs is going to make this available. So what sort of programs is this going to start out with?
The inaugural program, the very first one, will be on Saturday morning, February 26th at the Libero. It'll be free, open to the public, but in order to have some modest control over the numbers that might or might not show up, we're going to ask people to contact our website and indicate an interest in going, and then we'll send them tickets. So, but the first one is going to deal with some of the global issues that we're facing. And in that connection, Santa Barbara is a gold mine. UCSB in particular has people who are internationally known and considered as experts on some of these issues. And so it's kind of an introduction, the first session, it's kind of an introduction to some of these global issues, terrorism, the economy, the media, all of these kinds of things that impact us and seem to be the controlling issues. We have some of the world's experts here. And I suddenly found out, as usual, that sometimes in your own backyard, you've got people who are so distinguished and so sought after that there's no reason for us to look beyond the borders. So we're going to feature not only some of the most distinguished professors and research people at UCSB on these issues, but we're going to ask them to engage with citizens as we talk about these issues.
Who are some of the speakers we're going to see in this first program?
Well, we're hoping that Dean Melvin Oliver of the School of Social Sciences, who is also on the board, will give a short introduction as to the issue of civil discourse and maybe the interest in the Institute to bring that back and to talk a little bit about why that's important to just our democracy, our ability to reach solutions on issues. But after that, we're going to break up into a kind of a roundtable discussion with Mark Gergensmeyer, who's going to take a look at what he thinks is going to happen in the next 10 years. Having looked back on 10 years and wondered what happens, we'd say, well, our only opportunity here is to take a look at the next 10 years. And then Richard Falk and Hillel Elver is going to talk about climate change. Richard Applebaum is going to talk about the rise of China and the implications for American foreign policy. Benjamin Cohen on the future of money. Eve Darian Smith on human rights. Michael Curtin on media sources. And Michael Stoll on shifts in political power. And Cynthia Stoll on the internet's impact on the world.
So it's a huge broad base for this first program. You know, every issue that can be discussed.
It's almost too much.
Well, better too much than too little, but there's so much to be said about all of those things. And as well, we mentioned off mic before this, that this isn't just a presentation with a short audience Q&A. There's going to be more audience involvement that's aimed for.
Yes, that's correct. The way I mean, I've gone to a lot of presentations like that we have here, and we're great to have the university and its arts and letters program do these things. But I always walk out a little bit frustrated because I am one who researches some of these people ahead of time, read a book, read an article or whatever, and I want to ask them a couple of questions.
Yes.
And I never get the chance to do that. Well, that's the nature of the issue. So that was my first interest. How do I structure a program that allows maximum amount of participation? So I've asked all of these professors to take themselves out of the classroom and make their comments within a 15-minute period of time, and with a strong moderator to then encourage participation by the audience. And hopefully the audience will have on the website information about these people and be able to say, what have they said lately? What did they say in the most recent article? How can I test that? Do I agree with it? Whatever. And then kind of go through themselves, as well as asking the professors themselves to participate in the roundtable dialogue.
And if you've just tuned in, by the way, this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM. I'm Colin Marshall, talking right now to Ted Tedesco, who is running the Santa Barbara Institute on World Affairs, which is bringing some more civil discourse and very interesting sounding civil discourse on the issues of our time, and looking forward to the issues that might be very important in the next decade. And Matt mentions in the article about this, that one fascinating thing, especially about the way you're doing this, is that you're getting the information about the guests out to the audience as soon as possible, and more information, it sounds like, than is usually given in, say, a pamphlet or a brochure about a speaker. What are you doing in that sense?
Well, it's a rather challenge, as they say nowadays,
yes.
Because we don't have a lot of money to do this. So we're trying to encourage people to say, look, if you're going to spend the time talking with the people, maybe find out a little bit about what they really say. The problem that we have is that a lot of these people are not internationally and nationally known automatically. If I could get a number of five-star kinds of people that people tend to know and show up, in fact, I wouldn't have as much of a challenge. But these people that I've invited are just as distinguished and just as famous, but they don't have the name that might draw them. So we're going to try to advertise. We're going to try to encourage discussion about it. I'm going to send out a lot of letters to a lot of organizations encouraging them to attend. I'm saving about 150 seats in the Libero for students. I think I have a great deal of faith in their ability to listen.
Yes.
And a combination of the high schools and the universities and colleges that we have here, I would love to see at least 150 of the selected students who want to come and participate, and then the balance coming from the community at large. So we're going to try everything we can to begin to get the word out, and this is one of the first radio programs that I've appeared on in order to try to encourage and begin that process.
And with the, I want to return a bit to the sort of concept of civil discourse we started out with. How do you conceive of the strategies to keep things civil, to keep things high-minded, to keep things interesting but not argumentative in a way that isn't productive in these discussions. What are you thinking of? How do you structure them differently to that specific goal?
Well, my model is that we would have a velvet moderator who carries a big stick.
Yes.
So that even the audience members can be moderately controlled to not stand up and pontificate for 25 minutes about their own point of view.
This is important.
I've seen Santa Barbara events
where people have to get on a soapbox.
Yeah, we have. And people just love to stand in front of a mic and get a chance to tell a number of other people what they believe. And the whole point of it is to make sure the right questions are being asked, and to encourage and seek out the different points of view about it and attitudes. And people have to have some kind of discipline, I suppose. And so a good moderator, I hope, and encouraging people ahead of time to let's try to be diligent about what we want to say and our fellow participants here. So it's kind of a fingers crossed situation for me,
right?
But I'm encouraged by it.
Who's doing the moderating for this first program?
Well, I'm seeking a moderator, actually.
Oh, I see.
And even though the Independent article said that Dean Oliver was going to serve as a moderator, in fact, he's going to talk, I hope, about civil discourse.
Mm,
so
yes.
I haven't named a moderator yet, but I'm looking locally for that, and maybe even some people who are better known nationally.
It's hard to find all those qualities in one person, I imagine. You know, it's the velvet moderator, as you say, who has the big stick. It's characteristics that aren't necessarily on the surface of a person. Although, what I'm guessing is, and this is just a total left field guess from reading about your background, is that you've got a lot of experience evaluating people, and you can size that up in a person at this point. That's the skill you have.
That's what I'm going to go on. I'm going to go on a great gut instinct.
Yes, and let's
that this is the kind of person I think who could make this A, informative, B, do it in a way that's civil, and also get the words and the issues out.
Before we talk about the way that listeners can get in on this, I want to get an idea, as I alluded to, of your background. And of course, you as mentioned in the article, you were an executive at American Airlines. And what can you tell the audience about just where you're coming from?
Well, I started my career as a city manager. I was dedicated years and years ago to make cities better.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought by doing that as a city manager, a professional city manager, and I have to say, after look back on it, that the three cities that I worked in Enfield, Connecticut, Boulder, Colorado, and San Jose, California, actually ended up being better cities mm-hmm. for my efforts. Was I totally successful? I'm not sure. But I felt good about that. And then I completed about 8 years at the University of Colorado as a vice chancellor.
Mm-hmm.
And became more acquainted with the academic side of what goes on and realized some of the great resources that we have and the people who are doing some of the creative research on what's happening in the world and how it can impact us. But then I thought I'd tamper with private enterprise and was given the opportunity to go with American Airlines.
Yes.
And so I spent a lot of time on that. As well. So the combination has allowed me to be in management positions and judging how do you affect and impact and bring about change, which is really what management is all about.
Mm-hmm.
And so I hope I have some of those skills that I can bring to this institute.
Now, for the listeners who want to get in on these discussions, get in on the civil discourse, but very interesting discourse indeed. The website is sbiwa.org, if I have that right. And they have to do what to secure one of these free tickets?
Yeah, just call it's Santa Barbara Institute on World Affairs. It was just the letters, sbiwa.org, and indicate that you're interested in attending. And leave me an address or a website, and I can get back to you send tickets to you. And that's, I think, how we'll try to see if that works anyway.
And once again, these are free. And I've been talking to Ted Tedesco, the founder of the Santa Barbara Institute on World Affairs. Ted, thanks so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you.
This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. I'm Colin Marshall. We're going to take a short musical break and come right back. We're going to talk about Viva el Arte, bringing a new kind, or new in concept, perhaps. It's a big discussion. Kind of performance series to Santa Barbara. Stay tuned to Poodle Radio on KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara.
UCSB Arts and Lectures will be presenting the film 108 Degrees South at Campbell Hall on Wednesday, January 12th at 7:30 and 9:15 p.m. One of the most unique and prolific environmentalists of our time, Yvon Trinard, rock climbing legend and founder of Patagonia Clothing and Gear, and his best friend, Doug Tompkins, revisit the trip of a lifetime, a 5,000-mile expedition along untouched mountain ranges and an unsurfed coastline from California to Patagonia. When a young American adventurer, Jeff Johnson, seeks to follow in their footsteps, he encounters big surf and treacherous ocean swells, but above all, his eyes are open to the environmental disasters that threaten the places along the classic route, as well as the human triumphs at work to save them.
Been an attempt, as perhaps you know now, on the life of President Kennedy. He was wounded in an automobile driving from Dallas Airport into downtown Dallas, along with Governor Connally of Texas. They've been taken to Parkland Hospital there, where their condition is as yet unknown.
First out is recorded, and there's a pop-up into short right center, making the catch is addition for the third out. The 49ers leave the go-ahead run 60 feet away.
Like what you hear? Do you want to be the one behind the mic? KCSB is looking for interested students and community members to become DJs, news reporters, and sportscasters. No experience is necessary. KCSB is open to all who are interested in learning the art of radio. Our winter orientation will be held at 6 p.m. on Tuesday, January 11th, at the Life Sciences Building in room 1001. The Life Sciences Building is located off of USEN Road by the Anacapa Residence Hall on the UCSB campus. For more information, go to www.kcsb.org or call 805-893-3757. Again, that's 805-893-3757.
It's KCSB's past, it's KCSB's present, it's KCSB's future. It's profiles of your favorite KCSB programs and interviews with your favorite KCSB DJs. It's the KCS Beat, the Santa Barbara Independence column on all things KCSB. My name's Colin Marshall, I host the Marketplace of Ideas and Poodle Radio on KCSB, and since I write the column, I'll be really clear on the details. It's the KCS Beat, every Tuesday on independent.com, because why confine your KCSB obsession to the airwaves alone?
Want you to listen to
KCSB 91.9
FM in Santa Barbara.
It's KCSB 91.9 FM in Santa Barbara. My name is Colin Marshall. This is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent. And right now we're hearing from, who are we hearing from? We're hearing a track organized by Ali Cumingor, the pop culture editor at The Independent. The band is Hello Seahorse. This is Un Año Quebrado. They're playing Velvet Jones, Friday, January 14th, and before the break, we heard Wrong About Me from Brett Denon. He's playing the Sings Like Hell series at the Libero on Friday, January 7th. Now to bring up three guests we have right here in the studio for segment two, which I have been teasing for the last half hour here on this program. We're talking about Viva El Arte. What is that? Well, you've probably seen the promotion for the first event of this coming year, because I have and was very intrigued by it. But let me bring on first the author of an article, the cover story, in fact, about this program, a voice you will know if you listen to KCSB at all. She is the voice of KCSB News, and as well, she is a sort of a very much a champion of Santa Barbara community media. Kathy Murillo, welcome. Now, for some reason, I did not hear her voice when I brought on Studio A. So let me just check here one moment, and if the technical difficulties persist, they shouldn't persist very long. And Kathy, you know how we do it on KCSB, right? These things are sometimes improvised. There we go. We're brought up. Hi, Kathy.
Thanks again, Colin, for having me. We're excited about the story.
Actually, the spirit of KCSB, you know, these sometimes buttons aren't lit when they need to be lit, but now everything is. Kathy, who do you have with you today?
Well, first of all, Kathy Oliverson, and she's with Arts and Lectures. And not to embarrass her, but everything I hear about her is she's sort of that mover and shaker person who does all the logistical programming for Viva El Arte de Santa Barbara, the program and project that we're going to be talking about today. And next to her is Catherine Boyer, who's a liaison between UCSB and the community of Isla Vista. Yay, Isla Vista. We have IV pride here at KCSB and at UCSB.
And other Kathy and Catherine, welcome to the program as well. Thanks for taking the time. So Viva El Arte I'll frame it this way. I was walking down to La Colmena last night over on Milpa Street, and I was walking by the Marjorie Luke Theater, and I saw the poster that was advertising Mariachi Mujer Is it 2000 or 2000? Do they stay with the Spanish?
2000.
2000. Yeah. Mariachi Mujer 2000. I was very intrigued by this, and my girlfriend pulled me over and was like, we got to see that. And I didn't know until I read this article, the advanced copy of your cover story, Kathy, that this is part of Viva el Arte, and this is a wider program. So what is Viva el Arte? And, of course, you can delegate this to your guests if you like, but what is it?
I think Kathy Oliverson is the best person to talk about that.
Viva el Arte is a program. It's a collaboration between UCSB Arts and Lectures and the Marjorie Luke Theater, where you were, the Guadalupe Cultural Arts and Education Center, and Isla Vista School to bring programming to neighborhood venues for families in Santa Barbara County.
And what, first of all, how long is this, basic facts, how long has this been going on?
This is the sixth year.
Six years already. And what types of events are really representative of completing, not completing, but just moving forward with this mission so far in the history?
It's mostly Latino artists from representing various Latino traditions. Mariachi is always popular. We also always have people representing sonarocho, often salsa, music from Colombia.
And there's also dance programs, right?
Oh, yes, and folklorico. Folklorico dance is also really, really important. We always have at least one big company every year. This year in April, we're having Ballet Folklorico Quetzalli de Veracruz.
So, Colin, but what makes the program special, because besides formal presentational performances, there's school assemblies and workshops,
right.
And then the artists make trips into different community sectors. And Isla Vista School, why we have Catherine Boyer here to talk about that, is one of the venues. So the main venues are the Marjorie Luke Theater, Isla Vista School, and then Guadalupe, which is a small town, a city. It's an incorporated city in northern Santa Barbara County. And I say that because, believe it or not, there's people, especially on this campus, they don't know really what Guadalupe is. But it's a small city, actually always struggling with its prosperity, I should say. And it was in the rains, impacted by the river overflowing recently. So it's a community that needs support. And this is one of the things that Viva el Arte does, is brings programs there. So, Kathy, why don't you tell us just a little bit more about the special ancillary projects that aren't performances?
Okay. Each visit includes public performances in the venues, what we mentioned, but also probably most of the time in their 3 or 4 days here, the artists are visiting schools or doing workshops with local artists, and they also visit sometimes some social organizations, and also they visit Santa Maria Juvenile Hall and also Los Prietos.
So it's not simply performances. It's the idea, can I call it the idea to integrate the artists with the community in as many different ways as possible, besides just simply performing?
Absolutely, and that's what's so much fun, and that's why the artists enjoy it so much. Something that's really, really important is these are the best artists. They are Grammy winners, people who record for the Smithsonian, people who play, do world tours. Our performances are free, yet if you were to pay to see these people in festivals, the tickets can be $85. So for them, it's really, really great to be able to come and play for children, teach people in the community. It's a great connection for them, and they really enjoyed it as well.
It sounds like this is something that the artists themselves appreciate. They get it. Is that, I mean, that's one of the incentives for them, is they understand why this is important.
Absolutely. And the artists are a very, very important part of the success of the program. They are very generous with their time. And from the beginning, they've been very, very supportive.
Now, there's so many elements that are fascinating here. Kathy, writing your story, I guess, what are some of the most fascinating elements of the whole Viva el Arte project to you?
Well, if I could just come from a personal point of view for a minute. I'm a news professional, and so I don't always get to write about cultural activities like this, especially my own culture of being a Mexican American. And so it just reconnects me to my grandmother and you know, my own connection to the Virgin Mary. And I don't know, I'm just saying, it was really nice. And part of what happens when they take the artists into the some of the housing projects as the residents there make traditional Mexican foods. Mm. And so I got to write about that. And all that stuff was just, I don't know, it was just a really fun experience to write about that instead of weapons of mass destruction or whatever else, you know, that I happen to be writing about as a news person. So that was fun. And then everyone's really excited about it because it's a successful program. Mm. And that was clear. And it's a celebration of the arts, which is really wonderful too. And it connects to the community.
So. And speaking of the community, I mean, the broadcast, a lot of this broadcast is heard in Isla Vista. So could you take us into the Isla Vista connection a bit?
Sure. I'll let Catherine Boyer actually take the lead on
right,
that.
Of
All
course.
I know is that everyone I talked to was just excited to have Isla Vista School is a hub for families and the families who live in Isla Vista and raise their children there. Catherine, tell us more.
Well, as we talked about, there are three sites in the county of Santa Barbara for Viva el Arte de Santa Barbara. And Isla Vista Elementary School in Isla Vista was selected because it's our neighborhood community to UCSB.
Mm.
And that, a lot of people don't know that there are many families and obviously young children, people who've lived in Isla Vista for a long time, and then a lot of newcomers. And many of these residents view the Ivy Elementary School as their core neighborhood center. That's really where they would go to get their entertainment and information about what's going on in the community. And they love the fact that this is a free concert. It's walkable. And so many of the families will walk. There's a woman named Annie Aziz who's the recreation coordinator for the Isla Vista Recreation and Park District. And for the last 6 years, for every concert, she has taken a lantern and gone around and picked up the 8 to 12-year-old children that she teaches and walks them over to the concerts. These are free concerts that occur in the evening. And this Friday with Mariachi Mujer 2000, it's at 7 p.m. We expect a full house. And during the afternoon, there'll be two assemblies in the school. So the 450 children at Ivy Elementary School will all be able to listen to the Mariachi Mujer 2000 during the afternoon. And then the principal, Lisa Maglione, presses them to make sure they tell their parents and family members to attend the free concert in the evening. And one other thing about it is we get parent volunteers to help with the ushering, serving the refreshments afterwards. It's very much a social affair.
And I interviewed Felipe Garcia, who's one of the PTA activists, and I'll just give him a little shout-out in case he's listening right now. But he said that it engages the families with the school, which I think is really important for the school and for the children's quality of education if their parents are connected to the school. So that's another sort of not even the goal of this project, but it's one of the benefits that kind of comes out of it. And he said that the parents get together snacks and they work the door. And they're really involved in it. But I just want to go back to the idea of the school assembly, because I don't know about you, but when I was in school, I loved it when we got out of class and got to go sit and listen to something different. And I loved it when it was based in the arts, whenever the presentation was. So have you attended any of the school assemblies?
I've attended most of them, and they're very enriching, and the children love it. Each assembly is about a half hour. And so the auditorium's filled, and the musicians and performers really engage the students. They talk to them about their instruments. They have them sing along with songs. Oftentimes they'll invite a few children who are bold enough to go up on stage to perform with them and dance. So I think with Pistolera, the group from Brooklyn that does Latin American music and performed last fall, they had all the children in the auditorium jumping up and down to their song called Jump, Jump, Jump.
It's very danceable music. And what was cool about Pistolera is I went to their website and you can hear the whole song. They're not very stingy about putting, like some places you'll play the song and it'll play the first 15 seconds and then it'll fade out. But I heard their whole album, and it included the accordion, which is a very, I don't know if sacred is the word, but we love accordion music, and very upbeat. And they were a little younger. All those Pistolera people seem to be sort of in their 20s, and so I think they made kind of a special connection to the students. And my story does talk about how the woman in Pistoletta was really moved by being in contact with the students from Juvenile Hall.
Right.
And it was a very spiritual experience for her. She goes, oh, yeah, this is why I'm performing. I forgot what my music was supposed to be about. It's supposed to reach people. And she remembers when she herself, and I remember when I myself was a sullen, depressed teenager. And, you know, it's a tough time. You realize there's no Santa Claus. You know, that's what I always say about teenagehood. So she really connected with these young women who, unfortunately, didn't just have depression problems. They committed crimes or, you know, they're in the criminal justice system. So I can't say enough about this program. And actually, it was sort of a challenge as a writer because you don't want to just be glowing about the story. But I tell you, I don't have anything negative to say. It's an awesome, successful project, and I hate to be such a cheerleader about it, but really, the story will unfold. We won't give away everything here today because it comes out on Thursday. Oh, it might be online maybe tomorrow, right? Sometimes they throw it up online.
Sometimes they do it
the day before.
And certainly, I have things to ask, but since you wrote the story yourself, I want to first throw it to you to ask any other questions of the two other guests here that reveal things that. People that will tantalize people about this program, I suppose. Things you think they should know based on all the research you've done, all the conversations you've had. I mean, what's important to ask here?
Well, I think we've been talking about what people get out of it. I don't think we've talked enough about the Marjorie Luke Theater because it is actually located in the community on the Santa Barbara Junior High School campus. And what I understand, Kathy Oliverson, is that Arts and Lectures at UCSB does a lot of the booking, and because that's what you guys are experts at. But the Luke is sort of the administrator of the program, and they process the grant funds and stuff. So I would throw it to you to tell us a little bit more about the nuts and bolts.
Well, thank you. Yes, definitely. It's a collaboration and a partnership, and each partner contributes what they can do best. So the Luke is a major venue. It's actually the only place that's a fully professionally equipped theater. So when the artists come, even though the other places are very popular, for example, the Theater Royal in Guadalupe are present. They're using City Hall in Guadalupe. There's good sound. We bring in good sound, but the lighting is not as professional as at the Luke, and there's not as much space. So it's a really beautiful experience for families to be able to come. And because it's free, people bring kids, people bring neighbors' kids, for children to be able to come to a proper professional theater and hear a proper professional performance. Our programming is done collaboratively in that we take suggestions all year from the community, and we do research, and we come up with a short list, and then we sit down together and have a very interesting meeting about what are going to be our priorities for the coming year, what was successful, where we want to go, and what we want to represent. So our grant writer is Heather Silva, and each of the organizations does fundraising, and fundraising is very, very important because the entire program is free. The university does not contribute funding. It's all grant-funded. And so Heather, although each organization makes applications and requests, Heather is doing the grant writing for all the organizations. And our success has been, her success has been key to our success. She's been fantastic.
Well, for my story, I met with Rick Villa, who runs Marjorie Luke, and Elise Rubalcava-Ventura at Marjorie Luke to interview them for the story. And that leads me to remember that a very important part of the project, the Viva el Arte project, is the outreach. Catherine Boyer, sitting here, is the outreach coordinator for Isla Vista. And I think that must be one of the reasons why it's so successful. You have to find the audience members, and you are creating future arts patrons, I think. And you have to have people who are connected to the community. Right.
That's precisely it. Right now, Elise Rubalcava is the coordinator for the East Side. Before that was Trino Tafoya, and before that was Gerardo Ayala. And they each know a lot of people. They know who to go to. They know people who are involved for example, the outreach coordinators from the schools, they go to radio stations, they go to events, and they connect personally with people face-to-face about the program, about the performances, and also give us a lot of feedback about what's successful and what people want for the future. That personal contact is key also to the program's success. And we're very lucky now to have Elise, especially because she was formerly a correspondent for Univision, so everybody knows her.
And she's such a doll. And congratulations to her and her new baby, Lenny.
Lenny.
Shout out to Lenny.
By the way, if you've just tuned in, this is Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9. We're talking about Viva el Arte, bringing performers to the community and integrating them with the community as well. And reading your story, Kathy, it gives me a question that I want to kind of throw out generally here, which is that the program's been going for 6 years, like we've said, and it seems to have addressed a certain need in the community. I don't want to say solved a problem, but there does seem to have been an issue with sort of connecting performances with audiences that would be receptive to them. I mean, what's the need that was felt that brought the program about in the first place?
Well, the fact that the performances are free of charge is important. I was coming here with my husband this morning, and I was saying, you know, some people of our social class, I could really set aside money to go to performances, but some people don't have that, the finances to really go to a quality show. And Mariachi Mujer 2000, who's going to be here this weekend, they played at the Beijing Olympics. This is a world-class ensemble. Nati Kano, who is a regular with Viva el Arte, I think he's world class, a very, very, very famous performer. And, you know, he's just not playing on the street corner for people.
Yes.
So that's an amazing part of it, is just making it available. And everybody should be able to experience the quality music. And then what, not just mariachi, but other music forms. They're singing about our history, the history of Mexico. And, you know, a lot of people still feel that connection to the mother country. And it's a celebration of who we are. And so the project has found a way to connect people and bring them into this culture. In Arts and Lectures, I just give them so much credit. I think there was an incarnation of this project before it was called Viva el Arte, and there was some stumbling, right, Kathy, of trying to get to just get the right mix of outreach and performances, and you guys finally found the right formula.
I think so. The Viva el Arte was envisioned by Celeste Bellecci and Rod Latham and Patrick Davis. And yes, since Celeste Bellecci arrived at Arts and Lectures in 2000, she'd been working with Guadalupe and having the program represented and serving the North County. So we did have some practice. In terms of stumbling, I'm thinking, well, we learned that you have to be sure and have space heaters when you have the dancers. So there are things like that. But so, yes, we met a lot of people, worked with people, learned what would be popular, and then really launched the program after we'd had some practice and had a lot of connections and people on board who were working hard with us.
And the grant funders, we should give them some thanks.
Absolutely. The Irvine Foundation has been instrumental. Santa Barbara Foundation, Hutton Foundation, Montecito Bank and Trust, ICANN Children's Art Network, many, many others have been very, very important and very supportive.
And the project's grown, right? You gave me the numbers. I'm not sure if I stuck them in the story, though.
Yes, absolutely. In our first year, our first season, we reached 4,000 people, and at present, we reach about 15,000 people. And so when we think again of the Marjorie Luke and how important it is, that seats 800 people. So when that's full, that's really, really exciting. Things are really rocking for their concerts.
And people walk there. That's what Rick Vio was telling me, that for other performances, they have to have a professional valet service to coordinate all the cars. And so in the case of the Viva performances, people walk or they all pile into one car. So they, right. So it doesn't impact the neighborhood people.
There's right. There's certain. Go ahead.
And again, when you can walk like that, you know, you can bring children. Children can decide at the last minute. You know, it's kind of hard to make plans, but then you can bring lots and lots of children, and that's really important.
Good.
And I wanted to make sure to touch on that. This brings up, there's reading the story, reading Kathy's story, there's this idea of the geographical issues that arise, and people always talk about with performances, the separation between UCSB and the rest of Santa Barbara, how there's that 12 miles of freeway or so that causes a lot of issues with getting the right kinds of audiences. But I think of, there's Isla Vista we've discussed, there's downtown as well, there's the Marjorie Luke. And what are the issues at work here? What are the relevant issues about location, about where things need to be to get the community members you're trying to get excited about it? Of course, we've talked about the events that go on in Isla Vista at Isla Vista Elementary, but is it a matter of being just close, being where the community is, like going to them, or is it more complicated than that?
I would say it's being where people are, especially in North County, because the audience for North County comes from San Luis Obispo, Santa Maria, Guadalupe, Lompoc. But it's also that personal connection with the coordinator. We've mentioned Elise Rubalcavo. We've mentioned Catherine Boyer. The coordinator in North County is Graciela Barra. And again, she's very well connected to the media, to people in education. So, but having it in the neighborhood makes a big difference.
And also, we want to make sure there's, of course, the cover story we've been talking about that Kathy has in the indie on the cover, tomorrow Thursday. But where else can people learn about Viva El Arte? What are all the resources?
You can look us up on Facebook and MySpace. And then a really important part of each public event is we have receptions after the concerts. And that's when you meet the artists, talk to the artists, maybe try on their hats. For example, all the organizers are there. You can always talk to Rick Villa and Elise Rubalcalba at the Luke and find out more about the program, find out maybe more how you could take part, and also talk to us about future direction.
I've been talking to Kathy Murillo, Kathy Oliverson, and Catherine Boyer about the three Kathys, I can't resist saying.
There you go.
About Viva El Arte, the program that's been going on for 6 years of bringing performers into the community, integrating them with the community, doing all kinds of neat stuff. Cover story in this issue of the Santa Barbara Independent. Kathy, thank you so much for taking the time this morning.
Thank you, yeah, Colin.
Thank you.
This has been Poodle Radio, the radio program of the Santa Barbara Independent on KCSB 91.9 FM. Once again, I've been Colin Marshall. Hope to have you tuning in here next Tuesday at 8 o'clock in the morning. We're on until 9 every Tuesday, bringing you content from the Independent, stuff from the Indie, contributors from the Indie, the subjects, the writers, all kinds of things. Music collected by pop culture editor Ali Cumingore as well, with which we're going to close, by the way. Here's Ra Ra Riot, and the cut is Boy. They're playing Soho on Wednesday, January 19th. If you want to listen again, by the way, the show is at independent.com, archived every week. And you can hear more from me at colinmarshallradio.com. Thanks for tuning in.